I recently read about a lady who went into an Amish store. I'm not sure where it was. I believe this story is true. She went into an Amish store that sold cheese. This lady goes into the Amish store that sells cheese, and she has some cheese with her. And she says, I have my cheese, but I would like to exchange my cheese for cheese that was made by someone else. Well, the shopkeeper thought that that was a little odd, a strange request. So he began to probe. He began to ask some more questions. And finally, this lady admitted that as the cheese was being made, there was a mouse that had been found in the way of her cheese. Now, even though the mouse had been found in the way of her cheese, she said, I'm sure, I'm 100% positive that the mouse did not touch the curds. And since the mouse didn't touch the curds, the cheese is perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with it. Nobody's going to get sick. But my family knows. They know full well that a mouse was found in the way. And that just kind of freaks them out. So I've come here to see if you will take this, what I believe is perfectly good cheese, and let me exchange it for the cheese that someone else has made. And then they can take home my cheese, they'll never know the difference, and everything will be fine. Shopkeeper said, I think I understand. The man took the cheese, went into his back room, and repackaged it. And he came out with that same cheese in a different package and said, here you go. What they don't know won't hurt them. Now, you can make your own evaluation about that, but I tell you that little tale, which came from an Amish and Mennonite publication, because it's apparently true. And it also helps introduce tonight's text, Matthew 7:12, the golden rule. A week ago, if you were here on Sunday nights, we looked at Exodus chapter 23, verses 4 and 5. And it's in those two verses that God said to his people, I have some things that I want to tell you about your enemies. You find your enemy's animal out there, and it's under a burden. God said, that donkey, you help it up. And if you find that your enemy has lost his animal, you return it. You don't take it. In Matthew 7:12, Jesus picks up on something similar. He presents what is often referred to as the golden rule. Jesus, as we look at this rule, it's important to note that he was not the first person in human history to talk about how to treat people. In fact, as we look at human history going all the way back to Cain, we find that people have lived by various rules. One standard that people have lived by is sometimes referred to as the stone rule. The stone rule says as you go through life, you treat people in such a way where your own interests are served. In other words, if it works best for me to cheat you and I can get away with that, the stone rule says that's just fine. If it works best for me to injure you and get ahead, then the stone rule says I should injure you so I can get ahead and win. Along with the stone rule, there's also something that has been referred to as the iron rule. And the iron rule is the opposite of the golden rule. The iron rule says treat people as you do not want to be treated. Now, as you take the iron rule and you look at it, look at Exodus chapter 23, this is how it would work. Treat people as you don't want to be treated. I'm out. And I find the animal of my enemy, and I take it. I'm thinking, well, I don't like the guy anyway. If I liked him, I'd probably do something as far as helping him out, but I don't like him. And because I don't like him, I'm going to take that animal, and I'm going to bring it over to my property, and I'm going to use it. Or because I found this animal, and I know that it belongs to my enemy, I'm going to take it, and I'm going to sell it, and then pocket the cash. That's how the iron rule works. The iron rule has sometimes been referred to as the way of Cain because Cain was the first to use it, Genesis chapter 4 and verse 8. So we've got the stone rule. We've got the iron rule. A third rule that some have lived by is the so-called brass rule. Now, the brass rule is significant because it is a very, very common rule. In fact, you might find sometimes that Christians live by the brass rule. The brass rule says, I will treat you as you treat me. If you are good to me, I'm going to be good to you. If you are mean to me, expect mean treatment in return. This is the logical reaction as far as good treatment and bad treatment. Now, on the face of it, the brass rule may seem to be a fairly logical, a fairly sensible, even a fairly good rule. If there is no better rule than the brass rule, then this would at least be a somewhat sensible way to live. There is a fourth rule which has been suggested, and this is, of course, the silver rule. The silver rule is believed to have been originated by Confucius. And the silver rule says that we don't want to injure anyone. Sometimes you'll find a person who abides by this rule and they say, well, we don't want to hurt anybody. We can do this and this is our own judgment. This is how we're going to handle something, but we don't want to hurt anybody. We see the silver rule lived out by the priest and the Levite in Luke chapter 10, verses 31 through 32. You remember how the priest and the Levite, they see this man and they want to pass over on the other side? As you think about that story, have you ever considered that they could have gone over there and started going through the guy's pockets to see if he had any money? Guy probably couldn't have fought back. But they could have gone over and patted him down to see if he had anything of value. Or it's also possible that if the man were conscious, that they could have gone over and said, we see that you're injured. We see that you're not able to get help. If you're willing to pay us, if you're willing to give us something of value, we'll help you out. Silver rule. But Jesus didn't talk about the iron rule or the brass rule or the silver rule or the stone rule. This is the rule he gave. Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12. All things, therefore, whatsoever ye would that men should do unto you, even so do ye also unto them. And then he says at the end, for this is the law and the prophets. I am not willing to argue that Jesus invented the golden rule. I don't think that historically you can look at what Jesus teaches here and say that this rule had never been taught prior to Jesus' time. There were some others who apparently did discuss this same teaching. Mainly, though, the teachings were negative. Do not treat people in this way, in this way, in this way. Jesus comes along and builds on that. He takes it from a very different perspective. But Jesus also makes this, if you will, a hallmark of the Christian faith. Now, as you look at Matthew 7:12, and we're going to try to highlight several things from this specific verse, it begins probably with something like the word therefore. Anytime you see the word therefore, whether it's in Scripture or whether it's in a contract or some other setting, you always want to back up a little bit and see what precedes the word therefore. If you back up 11 verses in Matthew chapter 7, how do you find the chapter beginning? Well, this is the place, of course, where Jesus talked about judge not, that ye be not judged. Now, there are some, especially non-Christians, who look at that verse and they jump to the conclusion that Christians should never judge anyone or anything. That's not true. If people would read just a little further in Matthew chapter 7, you would find that Jesus made judgments, and Jesus also authorized us to make judgments. For instance, in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 6, Jesus said, do not give that which is holy unto dogs. That's making a judgment. Is this holy or not? Is this person spiritually receptive or not? The judgment that Jesus condemned in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 1 is the harsh, the nitpicky, the critical, the fault-finding kind of judgment. If you live long enough, you're going to find an adult who looks back at his or her upbringing and says, my parents, or maybe just one parent, was super critical. I can think about some people who have said to me, I could not, as I was growing up, do anything right in the eyes of my parents. If I got an A minus, my parents told me it wasn't good enough. They said you should have gotten an A. And if I got an A, my parents said that wasn't good enough because that was a standard class. You should be taking honor classes. If I got a job that was paying double minimum wage, that wasn't good enough. My parents said you should have found a job that paid more. It is possible to pick someone or something apart just to the nth degree. And that's what Jesus was faulting. Jesus was telling his people, you do not want to be a fault-finding critic. Some things need to be judged. Some things do need to be addressed. Some things need to be condemned. But Jesus said, you do not live in this kind of way. We live in an imperfect world. And virtually anything that you buy, any person that you meet, anything that you do, it's not going to be absolutely flawless. You have a piece of wood that's stained. And you look at it and you say, well, look, this wood has a little something over here. It's not perfect. Or this section didn't take the stain as well as the other section. Flawed. Still pretty? Yes. Still serviceable? Yes. Still a beautiful piece of wood, furniture? Yes. Perfect? No. Jesus said, if you go through this process and you live your life in this way, you're like someone who is trying to pick out a small speck of dust while he's got a telephone pole sticking out of his eye. He said, that doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So do not engage in this kind of activity. Now, as we zero in, with the wording in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12, you probably find something like, ye would, in this verse, at the beginning. And Jesus said, ye would, ye want, you desire to be treated in a certain kind of way. That's true. Most people have a certain way that they want to be treated. We don't want to be treated according to the iron rule. We certainly don't want to be treated according to the stone rule. We're probably okay with the brass rule, and the silver rule is not all that bad. But Jesus said, here's golden rule treatment. And for the most part, that's how people want to be treated. We want kindness. As we deal with others, we want goodness. We're looking for mercy. We want compassion. We want consideration. We want friendship. We want respect. And we want appreciation. Plus a few more things. Jesus, as he gives this rule, he says, you would, you want, present tense, ongoing action. He knew that people want to be treated in nice and thoughtful ways. Now for a little bit, let's give some consideration to how we would want some people to treat us. You have something in your house now or in the past that was broken down and worn out and ready for the junk pile? And maybe as you were looking at this literal piece of junk, the thought crossed your mind, maybe briefly, hey, rather than put this in the trash heap, I bet we can sell it. Who do you think that we can sell this piece of junk to? I know it's ready for the dumpster, but I think we can get a few bucks out of it. That thought ever go through your head? It has gone through some minds. If we would not want someone pawning off their junk on us, would we, Matthew 7 and verse 12, want to try to sell it to someone else? Speaking of money, and thinking about the golden rule, let's think for a moment about restaurants. Sunday, today, some of us may have gone out to eat. Maybe we're going to go out to eat later this month or later this week, sometime soon. And the restaurant that we choose, perhaps especially because there is a shortage of staff in our area right now in some places, the restaurant staff is reduced for whatever reason. Maybe they can't find help. And our server, it's a busy time of day, and our server is trying to wait on about 10 tables at once. Roughly 40 people, at least 30. And as that server is trying to handle literally dozens of people, perhaps even some small children, our drinks are not filled as quickly as we would like. Or maybe we had a request for some extra napkins. And in all the hustle and bustle and rush and confusion, the waiter or waitress forgets the napkins. Time to pay the bill. Ever hear about somebody complaining? I'm not going to tip her. I'm not going to tip him. I didn't get my napkins. Our drinks were not refilled quick enough. And all those things may be exactly right. That may be exactly true. But you know, someone did. That server did the best he or she could under the circumstances. And Matthew 7 and verse 12, what if we flip that around a little bit? What if instead of the person sitting at the table, we were that server? Would we, when it comes tip time, would we want to be treated in the way that we're treating someone? It's no secret that Teresa and I met at Ponderosa. And I'll tell you, I didn't ask her about this before I covered this tonight, but on more than one occasion, we had employees from other stores in the area. At that time, there were multiple Ponderosas that were reasonably close. And we had some employees come in close to closing time, on the weekends usually, Friday night, Saturday night. Staff was reduced. We were trying to shut things down. Grill was being shut down, and we had just a little cooking surface and so forth. But there were some people, some employees that liked to come in from other stores. In fact, this became such a problem that the area manager, the supervisor of that area, had to clamp down on this. But we had some people come in, larger groups. And at the time, if you were an employee, you got 50% off, and people would want the largest meals that they could possibly get, it seemed like. And they would order this stuff and then watch the employees hop to it, trying to close the place out for the day, maybe get home at a halfway decent hour, you know, hopefully by 10 o'clock, and there was the order. And then as that limited staff was trying to fulfill those large orders, complain about the slow service, ask for extra stuff. And it's not just in the restaurant work. You find that in other parts of life as well. People seem to enjoy. The unsaved seem to enjoy that kind of thing. Let's see how much pressure we can apply. Let's see if we can really apply the screws to these people and make them suffer. But if you flip that around, Matthew 7 and verse 12, would we want to be treated in that way? Talking about employees, think about salary increases. Some who are here are old enough, or maybe even now, depending on where you work, you may have received a raise which was a quarter an hour. If you look back at your work history, maybe you received a dime an hour. Now, if you can remember a nickel an hour, you're probably on Social Security. I can't go back quite that far, but maybe you can remember a nickel an hour raise. If you're in the position of giving a raise to someone, and this assumes that you're not bound by some corporate law, but if you're in a position of giving a raise to someone, if the roles were reversed, would you be satisfied with that raise? As we think about work, let's also think about hours. Work hours can vary for a lot of reasons, and sometimes it's schedule, sometimes it's the job. But suppose that we have control over the hours that are worked in a certain place, and we're assigning hours to someone. Would we want to work the hours that we're asking someone else to work? Or let's say that we have control over the equipment that's being used. And we've got some equipment which is 40 years old and should have been replaced 30 years ago. And we say to the person, I want you to do this job and here's the equipment. Oh, I wouldn't want to use it. But it's good for you. Good luck. Last night we watched a movie. Several here, if you were out, we had a nice time and that was put together in a good way. But in the movie, if you saw that, or if you didn't, I'll go ahead and give you a little bit of the background. In the movie, there was a section which talked about the need to work a weekend. And there was the, I'm going to guess, he was the lower level employee. He was told that he had to work. And there was this other fellow apparently above him, and he said, I'm also going to be working the weekend. Well, as the movie unfolded, you found out that the lower echelon employee, he did his best to work, but the other guy went golfing. Didn't treat the other fella as he wanted to be treated. Time and time again, as we go through life, we have the opportunity to use the golden rule. And that golden rule can be used sometimes very easily with friends, sometimes with strangers. But as we think back with Exodus chapter 23, verses 4 and 5, that golden rule also needs to be applied to enemies. Lots of places, lots of times, we think about, for example, as we're driving down the road, doesn't have to be a trip across the nation, in town. Use the golden rule. We're going to get on a cruise ship and cruise. We're going to get on a bus. We're going to be on a plane. Use the golden rule. Friend, foe, and even strangers can be included in the golden rule. Suppose someone knocks, comes to our door, and knocks on it today, tomorrow, later in the week. If the person on the other side of the door is someone we know, they're probably going to get a pretty good response. But what if we don't know that person? What if it's a stranger? Now, again, there could be some times where we're concerned about who's on the other side of the door, but that's not what I'm looking at here. Well, the person that is knocking on a door be treated in a way that we would want to be treated if the roles were reversed. The list of illustrations just goes on and on and on. We've had some recent focus on the hospital because of some of the things that have happened in our area. Let's suppose that in the near future we go to visit someone in the hospital. Get to the right hospital, park the car, go into the person's room, find where the person is, and it's just our luck that the person is fast asleep. Now, sometimes the person in the hospital might just sort of have the eyes closed and resting a bit, but in this particular case, I mean, he or she's snoring. It is clear, there's no doubt that this person is asleep. Now, I don't think that this is going to be true for anybody here, but I do want to list this as far as an illustration. There have been some people who have reason. I drove across town. I took some time that I could have spent doing something else. I want to visit this person, and he's asleep. Well, I'll just speak loud. Hey, Bill, you awake? Well, he is now. Or you just grab him by the shoulder and you start shaking him a little bit. Bump the bed a couple times. Bill will wake up. If you were in that hospital bed, would you want to be treated in that way? It might be that this is the first time that you've slept in 2 days. Now, we don't know that until Bill wakes up. But be careful. Imagine a good-hearted soul coming to the hospital and shouting at us or shaking us just because we drove across town. That's not a sufficient reason to act in the way that's described. The visit is not about us or really for us. I don't know if you saw this news report or not, and this may have been something that has been going on for a little while. But there's a fellow who is hospitalized. The state is California. The guy is late 70s, is not quite 80 yet. And from everything that's in the news report, it's been indicated that he's not going to recover. I don't know what all of his illnesses are. And the headline for the story that I saw is this: family upset after robot doctor informs patient he does not have long to live. Now, how would you like to live in a world where if you get a terminal diagnosis, you get a robot? Somebody just pops up on a screen, there is a message which says, you're going to die. Sorry about that, have a nice day. Now, we might get to that point at some point in the future, and maybe that's going to be the way that things happen. I don't know. But imagine a society where robots are used to deliver bad news because someone either doesn't feel like he, she, or they has enough time to see you, or because it's a whole lot easier to somehow input that message electronically into a keyboard and then send that to you. The golden rule is important. It was important in the past, it's important now, and it's always going to be important. Jesus tried to underscore that importance in Matthew chapter 7 and verse 12. We probably know the basics of the rule. But if you've never looked closely at Matthew 7 and verse 12, there's a little bit more. After Jesus gets through that rule, he says something else. He says, for this, that rule, is the law and the prophets. Well, that's a part of the verse that usually doesn't get a lot of attention, but it's important. The point there, Jesus, as he gives this rule, he essentially says, this condenses, or this sums up the law and the prophets. One source said this, if we could add up the law and the prophets, the sum, the total of the law and the prophets would be this so-called golden rule. We think about treating others as they want to be treated. Have you ever thought, though, that that rule could also be applied to God? God treats us as he'd like to be treated. God treats us as he'd like to be treated. But how is God often treated? Not well. Not well at all. So we think about that rule in relation to God. Hopefully, as a Christian, we want to pay attention to that spiritually. But also as we go through life, we want to make sure that we do our best to practice the golden rule. Going home tonight, you might have the opportunity to practice the golden rule. Tomorrow, whatever that means for you, and that's probably going to mean a lot of things for a lot of people who are here, a number of different things. The people that you meet, the experiences that you have, the choices you make, you'll likely have the opportunity to practice the golden rule several times this week. So we build on, as I said, the information from last week as far as treating the enemies. How am I going to treat my enemy? Well, among other things, treat them as you want to be treated. Treat your friends that way. Treat fellow Christians that way. And treat God that way, for that's the right way. If we're a Christian, this is a good reminder lesson. If we're not yet a Christian, this is one more reminder that the Christian life is the best possible life from every possible perspective. We've given the plan many times on how to become a Christian. Faith, repentance, confession, baptism into Christ for the forgiveness of sins, and then living according to the precepts that Jesus gave, some of which came through the apostles. And one of those precepts is the golden rule, a rule which greatly surpasses all the other rules tonight that we talked about. Are we willing to live that life and do that every day? Do we need some encouragement to live that life? If so, tonight you have some people who are here who'd like to help you do either of those things if you let us know what your life can be helped by. If you have that need, will you let us know now as we stand and sing the selected song?